So when we think of stress, our mind usually goes straight to the big life-altering events. We think about a sudden financial crisis, the major health scares, a painful divorce, or an unexpected career
shift. Welcome
to the Balanced Mind.
Because
my these events are massive, they naturally get our attention.
You had a great
and we
week.
Understand completely
so
why
me,
if you overwhelmed
go
with your physical wellness this past
the
week.
The world around us understands
we
it
spoke
too.
About
people
wellness,
of
four
days
challenges to
and
to
they give us permission to struggle.
Your physical
but
wellness.
Day-to-day life
I took
is rarely defined by
those
massive
anything
dramatic
else.
Shifts.
I must admit,
instead,
coffee
our
feels
emotional
a lot
wellness
in the morning,
is much more
winter.
Frequently
but
eroded
planning on
by what
the water
we can call
permanent
gray areas of daily stress.
I even
stress.
Went as far to buy a plastic
low-grade
drains
on
to help
energy.
Me remind
that accumulates so slowly and quietly that
in the morning when I
start
happening
and
also
we
during
find
the
ourselves
and it's
completely depleted.
So today we are going to focus on emotional wellness. We often treat our internal world the way a perfectionist treats a spotless living room. We want everything feeling neatly aligned, dusted, and perfectly presentable before anything else, or even ourselves. There is this unspoken rule floating around our modern culture that suggests wellness is a static destination. We are told through self-help trends and curated social media feeds that a healthy mind is one that is constantly upbeat, unbothered, and relentlessly positive. We are bombarded with slogans about good vibes only and instructions to simplify a manifestation in a brighter outlook whenever a shadow falls across our day. But if you try to live that way, you quickly realize it is very exhausting. It is an impossible standard because human beings aren't built to experience just one note on a keyboard of a piano. We are built for a whole keyboard, from the highest notes, the highest, brightest keys, to the deepest, heaviest bass notes. True emotion isn't about achieving a permanent state of calmness or forcing a smile when things are genuinely heavy. Instead, it is found in emotional flexibility, the ability to experience a wide range of feelings without letting any single one of them completely take over your whole day or take over the car, you know, the driver's seat. Think of it like a tree standing in a path of a heavy storm. A rigid, brittle branch might hold up for a while through a sheer resistance, but if the wind blows hard enough, it snaps like it cannot bend. Because it cannot bend, it snaps. A flexible branch, however, sways from the wind. It dips low when the gust is fears, almost touching the ground, and then it returns to a natural position once the storm has passed. Now, emotional flexibility is exactly the ability to bend with the reality of life without breaking. When we thrive
for emotional perfection, we end up fighting our reality. Imagine a day where everything seems to go slightly sideways. Maybe an important project gets delayed, a conversation with a loved one ends up in a misunderstanding, or you simply wake up with a lingering sense of unexplained fatigue. The natural response to this situation is disappointment, frustration, or sadness. Those feelings are not designed flaws. They are appropriate, honest responses to life's events. Yet the moment we feel them, a second layer of anxiety often kicks in. We start judging ourselves for our reactions. We think something like this: you know, I shouldn't be this upset, or I need to just look on the bright side and be grateful. This is what psychologists refer to as secondary emotions. Feeling bad about feeling bad. We layer guilt on top of grief, or shame on top of anger, and suddenly a simple natural emotion becomes complex, tangled knot that is incredibly difficult to untangle. Let's look at the common scenario to see how this plays out in real life. Imagine someone who prides themselves on being the rock of their family or workplace. They are the person everyone goes to for support because they are always calm, steady, and dependable. But one day, under a mountain of pressure, they feel a sudden wave of intense anxiety or sharp irritation. Instead of experiencing the irritation as a temporarily passing sensation, the drive for emotional perfection kicks in. They think, you know what, rocks are not supposed to be anxious. I'm a leader of the family. If I show this, I am failing. So they squeeze their eyes shut, push the feeling down, and put on the mask of total control. The internal conflict of trying to appear perfect, feeling messy, creates a far suffering than the original anxiety ever would have. So consider a sheer amount of mental energy it takes to maintain this facade. When we refuse to give an emotion permission to exist, we don't actually make it disappear. We just lock it away in an internal pressure cooker. We walk through our days performing balanced rather than actually experiencing the emotion. We answer every question about how are you with a practiced cheerful, you know what, I'm good, I'm fine, while underneath the surface, a storm is brewing. The constant performance creates a profound sense of isolation. When you only allow your polished, perfect self to be seen, you prevent the people around you from connecting with your real human nature. True connection thrives in the spaces where we are allowed to be imperfect. And by blocking out our difficult emotions, we are inadvertently block out the very support system that could help us carry the load. Emotional flexibility cuts through that knot by offering a simple, radical alternative. Validation without judgment is very important. It means acknowledging exactly what is happening inside of you without immediately trying to fix it. Why not change it? Or explain it away? If you are angry and you allow yourself to recognize that anger, you don't have to act on it destructively. You don't have to throw things around or shout. But you don't pretend it isn't there either. You just give it room to exist. Knowing that emotions are like waves of the ocean. They all peak. They roll in. They crash. And eventually they reside. An emotion left to its own devices will usually run its course quite naturally. It's our resistance to emotion that keeps stuck in one place. The trouble deepens when we try to dam the river. When we suppress an emotion because it doesn't fit our image of a balanced life, that energy doesn't just vanish into thin air. It goes underground. It turns into physical tension in our shoulders. It clenched jaw. And suddenly, it's irritable over minor things like a red traffic light or a lingering sense of emotional numbness. By trying to protect ourselves from the uncomfortable feelings, we accidentally numb our ability to feel good about the ones we do feel. You cannot selectively numb your heart. When you turn down the volume on sadness, disappointment, and anger, you accidentally turn down the volume on joy, gratitude, and deep connection as well. And you end up living a life in black and white instead of full color. So to move away from this trap of emotional perfection and toward flexibility, we can practice a very simple 3-step mental exercise during our daily routines. It doesn't require a quiet meditation room. You can do it while you're sitting at your desk or making a cup of coffee. So the first step is simply naming the feeling. The moment you feel a heavy emotion creeping in, give it a clear, unvarnished label. Say to yourself internally, this is frustration or this is fear. Just naming it activates the thinking part of your brain. It takes some of the raw, overwhelming power away from the emotion. Secondly, you need to allow the emotion to happen, to exist. This is the hardest part for the perfectionist. It involves saying, you know what, it makes a sense that I feel this way right now. And it's okay to let this feeling be here for a moment. Let it linger there. You aren't agreeing with the feeling forever. You are just giving it a temporary passport to pass through your awareness. So you experience it. It's fine to experience an emotion. Thirdly, you need to inquire the feeling with kindness. Instead of demanding, why am I like this? Why do I feel like this? Ask a curious question. Ask yourself, what is this feeling trying to protect right now? What is happening? What is the story behind the emotion? Let's try and understand. For instance, anger is protecting a boundary that was crossed, and sadness is just honoring something we care about that we lost. Building this kind of emotional flexibility requires a fundamental shift in how we talk to ourselves in the quietest moments. It's about moving away from the rigid, punitive shoulds. I should have done this and I should have done that. And moving towards a gentle curiosity. Instead of telling yourself, I should have been over this by now, or I have so much to be thankful for me to feel down. Let me not feel down. You can open space for a complexity of human experiences. You can be grateful for your life and sad about the loss at the very same time. You can be resilient, strong person, and still have a good cry on a Friday afternoon after a long, hard week. This shifts the heavy pressure of our muscles and our shoulders so we can relax. It allows us to be beautifully messy, entirely human, and authentically well. Ultimately, it reminds us that a balanced mind isn't one that never wavers or never feels pain, but rather one that knows how to bend gracefully with the wind, trusting completely in its own ability to find its center again once the storm has passed. So when we think about stress, our mind usually goes straight to the big life-altering events. We think about a sudden financial crisis, the major health scares, a painful divorce, or an unexpected career shift. Because these events are massive, they naturally get our full attention. And we understand completely why we feel overwhelmed when they happen. The world around us understands it too. People offer support, they check in on us, and they give us permission to struggle. But day-to-day life is rarely defined by those massive, dramatic shifts. Instead, our emotional wellness is much more frequently eroded by what we can call the gray areas of daily stress. This subtle, quiet, low-grade drains on our energy that accumulate so slowly and quietly that we barely notice them happening until we find ourselves completely depleted. We tend to imagine boundaries as these intense cinematic moments where we finally stand up to someone, deliver a perfectly rehearsed speech, and draw a very hard line in the sand. We picture confrontational meetings, difficult family dinners, or dramatic ultimatums. Because our culture often frames boundaries as inherently conflict-heavy and aggressive, many of us avoid setting them altogether. We worry about hurting other people's feelings. We fear creating tension in our relationships. We panic over the idea of being perceived as cold, difficult, or entirely selfish. Instead of speaking up, we choose the path of least resistance. We keep saying yes when every single fiber of our being is screaming no. We absorb other people's demands, anxieties, and expectations until we feel completely hollowed out from the inside. But the healthiest, most effective boundaries are rarely loud, aggressive, or confrontational. In fact, the true art of boundaries lies in making them quiet, consistent, and deeply internal. To truly master this practice, we have to experience a fundamental shift in perspective. A quiet boundary always starts by shifting your focus away from the other person and turning it directly towards yourself. We often make the mistake of thinking that setting a boundary requires us to successfully change someone else's behavior. We think if only they would stop calling me so late at night, or if only my boss would stop sending emails over the weekend. But the truth is, you cannot control what other people do, and trying to force them to change is a fast track to resentment and exhaustion. A quiet boundary doesn't demand that the other person change. It simply states that your response will be. You don't need to engage in a massive argument about why someone shouldn't act a certain way. You just need to clarify your own limits and stick to them with quiet dignity. Let's look at how this plays out in the rhythm of daily lives. Imagine you have a friend or family member who constantly calls you to vent for hours on end about exactly the same problem, never asking you how are you doing and leaving you feeling completely drained after every call. A loud confrontational boundary might look like telling them they are being incredibly draining and demanding that they stop offloading on you. That approach immediately creates defensiveness and conflict. A quiet boundary, however, requires no drama at all. It looks like deciding for yourself before you even pick up the phone that you only have 15 minutes of emotional energy to give away today. When they call, you might say warmly, "It's so good to hear your voice, but I only have 15 minutes to chat today, but I'm all ears until then." And then, this is the crucial part. When that 15 minutes is up, you gently but firmly end the conversation. "My time is up for today, but let's connect again soon. Take care of yourself," and you end the conversation. You don't need to be elaborate about why you need to end this conversation. But a good excuse is better than an aggressive tone. You simply honor your own limit with kindness and consistency. The real challenge of mastering the art of quiet boundaries isn't actually the words you say to other people. The real battle is the conversation you have with ourselves in the quiet moment that right after you set the boundary. It is the heavy, uncomfortable wave of guilt that often hits the exact moment you dare to say no or protect your space. Because many of us have been deeply conditioned from childhood to believe that being a supportive, reliable, and good person means always being available, always helping, and always putting your own needs at the very bottom of the priority list. Our brains interpret the discomfort of setting a boundary as a sign that we have done something terribly wrong. We mistake the internal friction of changing an old people-changing habit for a moral failure. To build a truly emotional wellness, we have to learn how to set with that initial discomfort without rushing to fix it. We have to remind ourselves that guilt doesn't automatically mean we made a mistake. Often it is just the natural, predictable friction of breaking a pattern that no longer serves us. If you have spent years being completely available at the drop of a hat, people are going to be surprised when you start drawing quiet limits. They might even push back or express disappointment. That reaction is entirely natural, but it is not a sign that your boundary is wrong. It is simply proof that your boundary was necessary in the first place. Other people's disappointment is not the crisis you are required to solve. It is simply an emotion they are allowed to feel, just as you are allowed to protect your peace. When you constantly practice the art of drawing quiet boundaries, you realize that protecting your time and energy isn't an act of selfishness at all. It is the act of preservation. If you constantly pour from an empty cup, you eventually have nothing left to give but resentment, fatigue, and frustration. Setting boundaries is how you ensure that when you do choose to say a wholehearted yes to someone, you can do so fully, genuinely, and lovingly, rather than a sense of heavy obligation, fear, or hidden anger. Saying a quiet no to the things that drain your spirit is the only way to have enough of yourself left to say a beautiful, meaningful, and a deeply present yes to the people and the moment that you truly matter in your life. So I want to ask you, please think about a situation in your life where you really need to put some boundaries to protect your emotional wellness. So today, or in this last episode, we're going to talk about emotional resilience as a daily practice. You see, resilience is the quality we deeply admire in others. We look at individuals who have walked through immense challenges, survived deep personal losses, or navigated staggering setbacks, and yet somehow came out the other side with their spirit intact, their warmth perceived, and their minds focused. When we witness that kind of strength, our inner tendency is to view those people as exceptional, almost superhuman. We talk about resilience as if it is a rare genetic trait, a fixed characteristic that you either possess or you don't. You treat it like an invincible suit of armor that some fortunate people just happen to be born with, while the rest of us are left vulnerable to the sharp edges of life. But this view is entirely misleading, and honestly, it is highly discouraging because it makes emotional strength feel completely out of reach for an ordinary person navigating on an extraordinary, challenging week. The liberating truth about resilience is that it is not static, a personality trait at all. It is a practice. It is a dynamic set of skills, perspective, and mental habits that are built entirely through small, repetitive daily actions. It is much more like physical muscle memory than a static sheet of armor. Think about how a weightlifter builds the capacity to lift a massive dumbbell. They don't walk into a gym on day one and attempt the heaviest weight in the room. If they did, they would injure themselves and give up. Instead, they start with a small, manageable weight. They focus on their form, they build consistency, and they show up day after day to exercise. Over time, as their muscles adapt to the minor strains, they gradually increase the load. Resilience works in the exact same way. You don't build the capacity to handle life's massive, catastrophic weights by waiting for the crisis to hit. You build that emotional capacity by practicing on the similar everyday challenges that cross your path on a regular basis. When we break resilience down into a daily practice, the concept immediately becomes less overwhelming. It stops being about being strong all the time or maintaining a flawless facade. It starts being about how you interact with yourself on a random Tuesday afternoon when things don't go according to plan. One of the most critical daily habits of a resilient mind is the cultivation of a realistic, grounded perspective. When something goes wrong in our daily routines, even something relatively minor like a missed deadline, a rejected proposal or a car breakdown, or a frustrating misunderstanding with a partner, our brain have a natural evolutionary tendency to catastrophize because our brains are wired for survival. They're automatically trained a minor setback as the major threat. We blow the incident entirely out of proportion and begin telling ourselves globally sweeping stories like nothing goes right for me and I'll make a mess of everything. I can't do anything right. This situation is completely ruined and there's nothing I can do about it. Well, a daily practice of resilience involves pausing explicitly in those exact moments of frustration and gently but firmly challenging that internal narrative. It requires us to separate the raw facts of what happened from the dramatic story we are spinning around those facts. When the wave of panic and frustration hits, you can learn to ask yourself three simple grounding questions to break the spiral of the situation. First, ask, is this problem truly permanent or is it temporary? Reminding yourself that the current discomfort has an expiration date immediately takes off the edge of the panic. Second, ask yourself, is this going to matter a year from now, a month from now, a week from now? This instantly widens your lens and shrinks the problem back down to the actual size. And thirdly, ask yourself, what is one small thing I can actually have direct control over right now in this moment? The third question is the ultimate circuit breaker for helplessness. When we are stressed, we tend to fix that entirely on the external variables we cannot change, like the traffic, the weather, and other people's bad moods or past mistakes. This focus paralyzes us. By shifting our attention strictly to what is within our immediate circle of control, is your next breath, like, and your next word, or your next small action. Focus on that. You shift your brain out of the helpless panic mode and back into the active, empowered, problem-solving mindset. You realize that while you cannot control the wind, you can control or you can adjust your sails. So let us conclude today's episode. As we wrap up the third episode of our wellness series on the balanced mind, let's take a quick breath and look at the full picture of what we've unpacked today. Emotional wellness isn't a flawless destination where the weather is always perfect. It is a life, an active journey. We started by exploring how shifting from the exhausting trap of emotional perfection to true emotional flexibility allows us to feel the full range of our human experiences without breaking. We looked at how navigating the subtle gray areas of daily stress requires us to catch those slow leaks early and implement simple, intentional micro-recoveries. We discussed the profound art of drawing quiet internal boundaries to protect our precious energy and our reservoir. And finally, we reframed resilience not as an unyielding genetic suit of armor, but as a gentle, compassionate muscle, a muscle memory built through small daily choices. Remember to keep your life in balance. You simply have to keep moving forward to stay balanced. One small mindful choice at a time. You don't have to navigate this road alone, and you don't have to have it all figured out one day. If today's conversation resonated with you, if you are looking for a deeper dive into these practices, or if you simply need a supportive space, you can find your center and build your own resilience framework. I would love to connect with you on a personal basis. You can find me, reach out and send a message directly to the Dion Bicycle Facebook page. So guys, let's keep the conversation going. Pull up a chair and work on keeping that bicycle of yours, which is your life, together and balanced. Thank you so much for sitting down with me for this time on this Wednesday evening. Thank you for spending time with me on the Balanced Mind. Until next time, take care of yourself, breathe deeply, and keep on moving.